media is DIY news. It is about people reporting their own news directly without the need for reporters, bypassing the corporate media.
There are 100 indie media or IMC websites worldwide providing grassroots reports of struggles, campaigns and protests.
There are so many people here who are saying no to the government today, and this is democracy in action.
Everybody's here. Everybody in the country seems to be here. They're just coming from all over the place. The banners are showing all the tiny, tiny little pockets of the country. Everybody has come down here.
The project started 3 years ago covering the massive Seattle protests which shut down the World Trade Organization summit.
Uncensored and unsponsored, IMC sites can be updated anywhere, anytime, by anyone.
The open-to-all nature of these sites means that you can publish your own reports about your own issues and at the same time connect to a global network of grassroots news. What you are about to hear are some highlights from these global websites and from our very own UK IMC Wire. For more information or to get the news direct from the streets, check out www.indymedia.org.uk.
Hi and welcome to the show. This is Indie Media Radio London on Resonance FM 104.4. We're back in 2004 and Happy New Year. And this week we've got a selection of stories as usual from the indie media news wires around the world, which are reports published just by people like you. This week we've got a piece towards the end of the show about the 10th anniversary of the Zapatista uprising, and throughout the show quite a lot of legal updates that have been going on over the last year and set to continue this year from various different court cases and protests around the world. So we'll be back after this track with the first selection.
And I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder. One of the four beasts saying, "Come and see." And I saw, and behold, a white horse.
There's a man going round taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around. The hairs on your arm will stand up at the terror in each sip and in each sup. Will you partake of that last offered cup or disappear into the potter's ground when the man comes around? Hear the trumpets, hear the pipers, 100 million angels singing. Multitudes are marching to the big kettle drum. Voices calling, voices crying. Some are born and some are dying. It's Alpha and Omega's kingdom come. And the whirlwind is in the thorn tree. The virgins are all trimming their wicks. The whirlwind is in the thorn tree. It's hard for thee to kick against the pricks. Till Armageddon, no shalom, no shalom. Then the father hen will call his chickens home. The wise men will bow down before the throne, and at his feet they'll cast their golden crowns when the man comes around. Whoever is unjust, let him be unjust still. Whoever is righteous, let him be righteous still. Whoever is filthy, let him be filthy still. Listen to the words long written down when the man comes around. the trumpets, hear the pipers. 100 million angels singing. Multitudes are marching to the big kettle drum. Voices calling, voices crying. Some are born and some are dying. It's Alpha and Omega's kingdom come.
And you're listening to Indie Media Radio London on Resonance 104.9.
Four?
Come on!
4.4, what are you talking about?
Sorry. And it's just to say that anybody's got any, if they want to get in contact with us, they can get in contact with us by email. And the email address is irlnewswire@ziplip.com.
Okay, we've just had the festive season, and of course, charities make much of homelessness at this time. The Joseph Rowntree Foundation recently reported that between 2001 and 2002, there were 12.5 million people living in homes with incomes below the poverty line. This meant that in total, 22% of the population were officially living in poverty. This including 3.8 million children, 2.2 million pensioners, and 6.6 million working age adults. Poverty continued to affect a large number of low income households with someone in paid work. About 3.5 million people experienced in work poverty between 1999 and 2002. Meanwhile, Tony Blair has made it possible for ministers to receive an extra £18,000 a year to assist them in maintaining a second home, combating rising costs in the housing market. At the same time, the National Housing Federation has warned that homelessness in the South West is reaching crisis levels. The NHF blames a chronic lack of affordable housing. The result has been that many thousands of people in the region were left homeless this Christmas, few with the resources to reach institutional care centres located mainly in wealthy boroughs, often seen as a ploy to help prevent wealthy city boroughs from being smeared by homelessness. The main centralisation of homelessness is here in London, where there was a complete lack of affordable housing or rentable accommodation available for those out of work. No unemployment benefits exist for those without a permanent address. Meanwhile, government ministers have put pressure on the Prime Minister to receive their extended housing allowance. They say they are struggling to make ends meet on their annual salaries. With the new benefits and on current UK and London house prices, it would then be possible for a government minister to pay for the price of their house with a high interest mortgage in less than 5 years. For the average homeowner, it is more than 30 years before a mortgage loan can be repaid without assistance. For more information, check the National Housing Federation website.
On the 8th of January 2003, Section 55 of the Nationality, Immigration and Asylum Act 2002 came into force. Within a week, hundreds of asylum seekers were made destitute, many of them having to sleep rough before finding help. Since that date, many groups have sprung up around the UK and Scotland, pledged to scrapping Section 55 and to providing what support they can for those made destitute until such time as it is scrapped. Around the UK from the 8th of January 2004, there will be actions to highlight the hardship of victims of Section 55. 48-hour fasts are also being planned in Oxford, Sheffield, Leeds and Nottingham, while there will be rallies in Manchester and Liverpool.
There are currently 45 asylum seekers on hunger strike, including 16 in hospital on the tiny island nation of Nauru. They have been held there by the Australian Government and the International Organisation for Migration for more than 2 years as part of the Australian Government's Pacific Solution. Five more people recently joined the hunger strike on Nauru after the delegation from the Immigration Minister visited the asylum seekers. Despite the pleas of the Australian Government's official mediator, John Hodges, the resolve of the asylum seekers remains firm: freedom or death. The women of the camp have made the same vow and have indicated that they too intend to join the hunger strikers if freedom is not forthcoming. Afghanis are also resisting the pressure of authorities to return to Afghanistan. In solidarity with hunger strikers on Nauru, on 5th of January, activists around the world hosted a virtual occupation on the websites of both the Minister of Immigration and the Liberal Party of Australia. For the length of one working day, there was no business as usual. After approximately 5 hours following the commencement of the electronic disturbance, the website of the Australian Immigration Minister was returning this message. The page cannot be displayed. The page you are looking for is currently unavailable. The website might be experiencing technical difficulties.
Cyber sit-ins, which began around 1996, aim to draw attention to an issue or a cause. Just as a physical sit-in outside a government or corporate building does, or an occupation of a university, for example. Cyber sit-ins, or cyber strikes, fall within the realm of the practice of electronic civil disobedience. They are not destroying the website or hacking into any data. They are simply making the website unavailable for a short period of time. The result of many people logging into a website might cause such a ripple or disturbance in the flow of data, but the gesture is primarily symbolic, to draw national and international attention to a social cause. This tactic has been used successfully for many causes over the years. Some refugee advocates publicly distance themselves from this action, nervous of possible legal consequences. But on the day following the electronic disturbance, a letter from the Minister of Finance in Nauru was published in the Australian newspaper The Age, in which he begged the Australian government to honour their agreement and send professional medical help to the hunger strikers in Nauru as a matter of urgency. For more on this story, check out oceana.indymedia.org and melbourne.indymedia.org.
One morning, with time to kill, I borrowed Jeb's rifle and sat on the hill. I saw a lone rider crossing the plain. I drew a bead on him to practice my aim. My brother's rifle went off in my hand. A shot rang out across the land. The horse he kept running, the rider was dead. I hung my head, I hung my head. I set off running to wake from the dream. My brother's rifle went into the sheen. I kept on running into the Southlands. That's where they found me, my head in my hands. The sheriff, he asked me, why had I run? And then it came to me, just what I had done. And all for no reason, just one piece of lead. I hung my head, I hung my head. Here in the courthouse, the whole town was there. I see the judge high up in his chair. Explain to the courtroom what went through your mind. And we'll ask the jury what verdict they find. I felt the power.
Electronic voting security firm hacked. A company developing security technology for electronic voting has suffered an embarrassing hack break-in that executives think was tied to the bitter debate in the US over the safety of casting ballots online. Vote Here, Inc. of Washington confirmed last Monday that US authorities are investigating a break-in of its computers, which occurred last year. The intruder accessed internal documents and may have copied sensitive software blueprints. This mirrors a hack of the company Diebold, who have also been involved in huge controversy over their voting systems, which include electronic voting machines, and who have threatened several web hosts and websites with legal action after serious faults in their systems were made public. A representative of Vote Here, Inc. said, "We think this is political. There have been break-ins around election companies over the last several months, and we think this is related."
A California-based games development company has recently released the first information on its new Riot Police game for PCs, scheduled for release later this year. The action-packed strategy game will challenge players to quell 16 different riots involving peace rallies and protests. Players will have a number of units at their disposal, including standard riot police, heavy riot police, mounted riot police, enforcer vehicles, and tank-mounted water cannons, and other smaller weapons including batons, rubber bullets, beanbag shotguns and CS gas. The idea is that they suppress a variety of protesters, including dangerous militants and angry community leaders. Similar games where players can run rings around the police on the streets have been widely condemned by both politicians and American value groups.
And staying in America, but slightly more seriously, a federal judge has ruled that the mass arrest of around 150 people during the World Trade Organization's demonstrations 3 years ago in Seattle in November 1999 were invalid. In a ruling in a lawsuit, U.S. District Judge Peshman said that the arrests on First Avenue violated the constitutional mandate that arrests be made only when police have probable cause to believe a crime has been committed. The judge called the Seattle Police Department's documentation of the arrests atrocious and noted that the arrest forms are incorrect in stating that the arrests were made inside a no-protest zone closer to the WTO. A trial to determine whether the city is liable for damages is scheduled for January the 20th and will hinge on whether it can be shown that the then-mayor, Paul Schell, and the then-police chief, Norm Stamper, subsequently approved the mass arrests implemented by the police field commander. A group of protesters were herded by police up north First North Avenue and were then surrounded and arrested. They didn't have any choice of where they were herded to. The plaintiff suing the city alleged that arresting officers made no attempts to differentiate between demonstrators and innocent bystanders. So that court date is set for January the 20th. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Meanwhile, back at home, the court case against a samba player from Turin who had been accused of 3 counts of assaulting a police officer during the anti-arms fair Dicey protests last September was dropped this week. The samba player had been arrested at a protest against the Dicey Arms Fair delegates' dinner at the Royal Lancaster Hotel on the anniversary of September 11th. Witnesses said police had attacked the samba band and then accused one member of the band of assaulting the police. The police officer who had brought the case against the activist had unfortunately typed the wrong date on a memo, and so none of the police witnesses turned up to court. The presiding magistrate rebuked the police for gross incompetence, and when it was pointed out that the defendant and several witnesses had come from Italy for the trial, as well as UK witnesses having travelled from Edinburgh and Northern England, the magistrate dropped all 3 charges and abandoned the case. Those involved say there is no doubt that the large number of defence witnesses helped convince the magistrate that the case should be dropped.
This is for all the folk. For all the simple folk.
Straight out of London town.
It's for you folk.
Here's an interesting bit of conspiracy theory for you.
George Bush is an Islamic fundamentalist, obviously. Trained by Al-Qaeda in the heart of Texas to fight for the faithful army. He's now in the process of uniting the rest of the world against the good old US of A. The free will come crashing down if he has his way.
It's the only explanation of pushy boys and Islamic fundamentalist. He's 3/4 of the way through his plan already and no one's even noticed. There must be a damn fine Al-Qaeda training camp they got down there in Texas. Him to pretend he's as thick as pig shit was a stroke of pure bloody genius.
Yeah, George Bush is an Islamic fundamentalist, obviously. Trained by Al-Qaeda in the heart of Texas to fight for the faithful army. He's now in the process of uniting the rest of the world against the good old US of A. The land of the free will come crashing down if he has his way. Trust me. He's presided over and has been directly involved with one of the worst financial disasters of a generation. Every move he makes seems to be directly against the interests of his nation.
Haven't you noticed?
He's used the media to increase the social insulation of an already fairly blind population since the McCarthy days. And now he's declared war on Islam just to increase the consternation. As far as I can see, there's only one explanation. George Bush is an Islamic fundamentalist, obviously. Interesting conspiracy theories, because no one knows what the fuck's going on. We're all looking for explanations. The most interesting one I heard the other day was that the West was controlled by genuine democracies that actually represent the will of their populations. Only the one about the aliens, the Antichrist, and the Freemasons is more laughable. Ha, 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 ha. I think my theory is much more plausible. Let me tell you about it. It goes like this. George Bush is an Islamic fundamentalist, obviously. It really is the only explanation I can see. For his truly anti-American foreign policy. Now at this point I would ask you all to sing along with the chorus normally, if it wasn't for the fact that there are cameras on the premises and the CIA might be requisitioning the tapes at any time. So I recommend that under all circumstances, catchy though this number is, you do not sing along. You do not even smile. I recommend the most you do is tap your feet. But you do that at your own risk.
One, two, three.
Yeah, George Bush is an Islamic fundamentalist, obviously.
An Australian Aboriginal leader will be in London from the 11th to the 14th of January to try to start legal proceedings against the Crown for allowing Australian government to make laws harming the Aborigines. Michael Anderson says he and his legal advisers have found a precedent in British law where Anderson Nyunga Gurunjong Murigilla, by his full Aboriginal name, once stripped to his underpants and threw a Union Jack wrapped around a ceremonial spear over the fence into the grounds of Buckingham Palace as TV cameras looked on. It was Aboriginal symbolism to take the evil back to where it started, he explains. Actually, you're supposed to do it naked, but I didn't think I'd get away with that. He was recently elected chairman of the Gumilaro Nation of 15,000 people, Australia's second largest Aboriginal group, who are spread through the northern New South Wales and southern Queensland. His own clan are laying claim to the Lightning Ridge area, famous for and wealthy from opal mining. Anderson was one of the half dozen young activists who in 1972 set up the Aboriginal Tent Embassy in Canberra.
Meanwhile, the Sherwood Tree protest camp is still on eviction alert. Bellway Homes are trying to remove a green wedge site on the edge of Mansfield. The site contains a number of very old trees, including a 300-year-old beech. To prevent this, there is currently a tree protest camp. The people on the site are well dug in, with tunnels and tree houses. So far, their presence has prevented any further destruction, and an application for village green status, which would protect the site for future generations, is currently being considered. Campaigners say they really can win this one. The exact reason for the green site removal is to allow the building of a link road for a new housing estate. However, there are two entry roads to the new estate already, and campaigners believe that this road is actually intended to open up the immediate area to allow for further development. In addition to this, recent information suggests that an illegal eviction is likely, since campaigners say that the developers seem to have deemed the Sheriff of Nottingham too expensive for an official eviction.
And a little bit of world news. Later this month, the latest World Social Forum is set to take place in Mumbai, India, with tens of thousands of campaigners set to meet to discuss positive alternatives. The forum will run from the 16th to the 25th of January and provides a counterpoint to the World Economic Forum, due to be held immediately after in Davos, Switzerland. The WEF informally brings together heads of government and businesses to discuss the corporate agenda. Protests are, of course, expected.
You're listening to Indie Media Radio London on Resonance FM 104.4, and now a short item that crosses intervention with flash mobs and anti-consumerism.
Wow.
On the 20th of December, a party was held at IKEA in Amsterdam and Paris simultaneously. About 40 people joined the party in Amsterdam. They brought along drinks, cakes, streamers, games, and came dressed in fancy dress and attended one of the IKEA stores. About 4 interior displays were taken over and thus transformed into parties. IKEA staff had mixed reactions. Some of them said it was okay, so long as they didn't drink alcohol, or so long as they didn't make a mess. Others told them to collect their stuff and to leave immediately. This meant that the group had to move around a bit. In the end, by staying friendly towards the staff, but still refusing to leave, they stayed all the way till closing time, and the staff even helped them tidy up. When they offered to purchase a bed cover that had got wine stains on it, the manager said they would replace it, no worries. However, in Paris, the reception was a little more aggressive, with staff calling police and 2 people being arrested, one for taking pictures in the store. The campaigners have vowed that more parties will take place in IKEA and other stores in an anti-consumerism campaign.
Weeks has seen an increase in resistance to Israel's state separation fence in the occupied West Bank. Protests and direct actions have been taking place daily, marked by highly visible solidarity among Israeli and Palestinian activists, as well as by the Israeli state's use of lethal force. The heat has been on since since occupation soldiers shot live ammunition at a large group of Israeli, Palestinian and international solidarity movement activists who were tearing down a section of the fence, which is elsewhere usually a concrete wall. In the village of Masha, one Israeli protester and an American woman were seriously wounded and several others injured. The next day saw a demonstration against the wall in Qalqilia, as well as a protest in Tel Aviv denouncing the army's actions. Meanwhile, the Israeli sniper who shot British activist Tom Herndel, rendering him brain dead, has been arrested. The army leadership has now admitted that its initial accusations of Tom being armed and in camouflage, as well as its claim that the soldier was responding to Palestinian fire, were lies. Tom was shot in Rafah in April last year while trying to help children out of the way of an advancing armoured vehicle. The arrest is particularly important as opening fire on activists in Palestine is becoming increasingly regular for the Israeli army, as indicated by the earlier report. On the 1st of January, the Israeli army fired over 100 rubber bullets aimed at people's heads during another demonstration. Approximately 10 people were taken to hospital and deportation orders were issued against four activists, including a Swedish MP.
Meanwhile, momentum is building across the world for a global day of action on the 20th of March 2004, the first anniversary of the US invasion of Iraq. And it is anticipated that events will soon be called for London and the rest of the country. The calls have come from both the American anti-war movement and out of the European Social Forum held last year in Paris. Indeed, from the same organising mechanisms that led to the global accord breaking massive peace protests on February the 15th last year. The National Council of Arab Americans has also joined the call for mass mobilisations.
Lord Hutton's report into the death of Dr. David Kelly was expected to be published next week, but it seems that there will now be a delay of 1 to 2 weeks while the report is finished. The Stop the War Coalition will be calling a lobby on the day that Lord Hutton announces his findings. They will also be producing their own report, which they say will be written by eminent lawyers, politicians and journalists, demanding a full-scale inquiry into the reasons why Tony Blair took the country into war with Iraq. A week-long hearing at High Court level was also due to take place this month in Bristol to decide if the Iraq war broke either international law or British criminal law. These hearings will still be going ahead, but the date is once again unclear. When they finally do go ahead, they will be of international significance, so watch this space. The trial of a further 7 people accused of aggravated trespass on the 9th of March 2003 is due to begin at Cirencester Magistrates Court. A main plank of the defence will be that the loading and preparation of US B-52 bombers was not lawful, and indeed that the war in Iraq was not lawful, so this is yet another trial where the legality of the war will be challenged. Meanwhile, on Thursday the 15th of January, a judicial review will consider whether the police acted unlawfully by forcibly detaining innocent people and preventing them from protesting against the war in Iraq. More on this next.
The background to this case is that on the 22nd of March 2003, 3 coaches of about 150 peace campaigners were prevented by the police from attending an anti-war demonstration outside RAF Fairford. Police stopped and searched the coaches about 6 miles from the destination. The officers then forced the coaches back onto the motorway and surrounded them with police vans and motorcycle outriders all the way back to London. Enterprising protesters held hastily made signs against the window, reading, "Help! Peace protesters illegally detained." After passing cars started honking support, the police decided to close the motorway completely behind the coaches. Some of the passengers dialed 999 to report that they were being kidnapped, but were told that they were not being detained and were free to go wherever they liked. However, attempts to negotiate even a toilet break were rebuffed by the motorcycle outriders. One woman passenger had to resort to urinating into a sandwich box in full view of police with video cameras. John Halford, a solicitor at Bindmans and Partners who represents some of the passengers, said, "Democracies are founded on the right not to be detained without charge, freedom of speech and the right to protests. These basic rights are more important than ever in times of war, but that is also when they are the most vulnerable to attack. The High Court hearing of the judicial review has been announced for the 15th and 16th of January 2004, and the judges are then expected to deliver their ruling on the 15th of February. Supporters are expected to gather outside the courts. For more on this, see www.fairfordcoachaction.org.uk.
I was five and he was six. We rode on horses made of sticks. He wore black and I wore white. He would always win the fight. Bang, bang, he shot me down. Bang, bang, I hit the ground. Bang, bang, that awful sound. Bang, bang, my baby shot me down. Seasons came and changed the time. When I grew up, I called him mine. He would always laugh and say, remember when we used to play? Bang, bang, I shot you down. Bang, bang, you hit the ground. Bang, bang, that awful sound. Bang, bang, I used to shoot you down. Music played and people sang. Just for me, the church bells rang. Till this day, sometimes I cry. He didn't even say goodbye. He didn't take the time to lie. Bang, bang, he shot me down. Bang, bang, I hit the ground. Bang, bang, that awful sound. Bang, bang, my baby shot me down.
This is Indie Media, Radio London. Don't hate the media, all the media.
The 1st of January was the 10th anniversary of the Zapatista uprising in Chiapas, and also 20 years ago, the founding of the EZLN. The Zapatistas have organised international encuentros attracting thousands of people from around the world and have been influential with the global anti-capitalist movement. The uprising has allowed over 1,100 communities in Chiapas of 300 to 400 people to organise federally into 32 autonomous municipalities where the power lies at the base. Local decisions are taken at a local level and important decisions are made at a wider regional or municipal level. In these areas, the people have much more control over their lives than before, and women can play a much larger part than traditionally society allowed. The Zapatistas have been celebrating these anniversaries by closing their villages to the world's press for 5 days and by launching their campaign, El Fuego y la Palabra, the fire and the word. Since November, peasants are discussing Zapatismo and the campesinos. Feminists discuss Zapatismo and women, and students are also discussing. Thousands of youths gathered in the capital for a huge solidarity concert and video screenings are taking place in the neighbourhoods. In 2001, the Mexican government passed a law about the rights of indigenous people, which was far from fulfilling the promised San Andreas Accord on indigenous rights and culture, as had previously been agreed with the EZLN. In summer 2003, during the build-up for the anniversary celebrations, the EZLN announced that, despite the stupidity and blindness of Mexican politicians, the so-called San Andreas Accord will be put into practice within the territories. Five councils of the good government were set up in Chiapas, and a number of caracoles, contact points. At the same time, all contacts with the Mexican government were suspended. For the time being, the Zapatistas of Chiapas will not participate in international initiatives against the globalization of power, but stay in the jungles of Chiapas. They continue, however, to send out words of wisdom.
Here are some extracts from a communique of Subcomandante Marcos, where he introduces the book Fire and the Word and gives some useful advice to journalists. But it so happened that a journalist interviewed me the other night, and among many questions, one came up that made me understand everything. And what's your opinion about the romantic stage of the war? I turned around to see if he was joking, but no, he was serious and checking to see if the tape was running in his machine. Romantic? I wondered. That journalist, along with others, had been in one of the poorest villages in the selva for several days now, sleeping under the roof of an old church and eating canned food. A few metres from where he was sleeping, a family was eating nothing but beans and tortillas. If this is romantic to him, who's close to us, I asked myself, what must it be for those who are far away? A few hours after the romantic question, and along with the fog of fever that had been plaguing me for 3 days, we had to activate defence measures when we found out the news of the armed attack against the military checkpoint in Tuxtla. We got the few journalists who were there out. No one liked it. I noticed, in fact, a marked annoyance on the part of all journalists whenever they had to experience a red alert. In the end, we were left alone. Even those who appeared to be the most devoted went away for a while, despite the fact that I had explained to them that it would be useful for someone to always be here because things come up and someone should see, etc., but they got bored.
3 years after these lines were written, a woman, a journalist by profession, ended up leaping, not without difficulties, the complicated and thick wall of Zapatista scepticism, and she stayed and lived in indigenous rebel communities. From that time on, she shared with the compañeros the dream and the sleepless nights, the joys and the sorrows, the food and its absence, the persecutions and the respites, the deaths and the lives. Little by little, the compañeros and the compañeras came to accept her and to make her part of their daily lives. I am not going to recount her history, among other things, because she has preferred to recount the history of a movement, the Zapatista one, and not hers. This person's name is Gloria Muñoz Ramirez. In 1997, she left her work, her family, her friends, and came to live in the Zapatista communities. She did not publish anything during those 7 years, but she continued to write, and she did not abandon her journalistic keenness. She wasn't a journalist anymore, of course, or she wasn't just a journalist any longer. Gloria was learning a new way of looking, the one that is far from the glare produced by the spotlights, from the pandemonium of the bandstands, from the pushing and shoving behind the news, from the fight for the exclusive, the way of looking which is learned in the mountains of the Mexican southeast. We didn't know it. It wasn't until the announcement of the birth of the caracoles and the creation of the good government juntas when we received a letter from her presenting that embroidery of words, dates and memories and putting it at the disposal of the EZLN. We read the book. We liked it. We responded to Gloria just like we respond, that is, with a hmm, and? Gloria wrote again, and she talked about the double anniversary, 20 years of the EZLN, and 10 years since the beginning of the war against the forgetting, about the stage that was starting and the creation of the caracoles and the good government juntas, something about a plan for celebrations. I don't remember how many other things. Among so much chatter, one thing was clear. Gloria was proposing to publish the book so that young people of today could learn more about Zapatismo.
Young people of today, I wondered, and asked Major Moises, aren't we the young people of today? We are, Major Moises answered me, without stopping saddling up his horse, while I kept on oiling my wheelchair and cursing the fact that Viagra hadn't been included in the field kit. Where was I? Oh yes, the book that wasn't a book yet. I went to the committee and I stretched out the tapestry, the rough draft of the book, on the muddy September grounds. They saw, I mean the campaneros saw themselves. Aside from being a tapestry, it was a mirror. They didn't say anything, but I understood that there would be more people, many more people, who might also see and see themselves. We responded to Gloria. Carry on. The EZLN Fire and Word book, written by Gloria Munoz Ramirez, has been edited through two efforts, that of Rebeldia magazine and that of the Mexican newspaper La Jornada, which is run by Carmen Lira. Another woman. Editorial design is by Efrain Herrera, and the illustrations are by Antonio Ramirez and Domi. More women. Yuriria Pantoja was in charge of photographic editing, and Priscilla Pacheco carried out the editorial care. Women once again. If the reader notices that women are in the majority, do what I do. Scratch your head and say, no way. I am certain that, like Gloria, many people, by looking at us, will look at themselves. And I am also certain that she, and many others along with her, will find themselves the better. And that is what this is all about being better. From the mountains of the Mexican southeast, Subcomandante Insurgente Marcos, Mexico, October of 2003.
And for more and a full piece, all of that, unedited, you can go to chapas.indymedia.org. They've got a Spanish section, but they've also got an English section, I believe. You can also hear here on Resonance 104.4
FM
on Friday between 5 and 6:30, the Ice Cream Soda Claws show will be doing a piece on the Zapatistas. Mention again, if you want to get in contact with us, our email address is irlnewswire, all one word, at ziplip.com. And we're going to leave you with a couple of tracks. I can't actually remember what they are. Kind of dub tracks. So we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Happy New Year, even though it's nearly a week into it.
You're listening to Indie Media Radio London on Resonance FM 104.4. Bypassing the corporate media machine.
So don't hate the media, become the media!
Brothers and sisters, today, what are you doing up there? Hope you're doing fine. Well, I'm gonna make you mine, because all I've got in mind to give is love. Love, 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 love. Wadada, 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 wadada. Wadada, wadada.
Dub.